So Shaddam the Akedah, there's so many amazing stories in the Parsha. I don't want to skip over any of them when it comes to Shaddam because he has such great takes.
But
hot takes for the 1800s,
that
right?
That being said,
the Akedah takes the cake. And that's probably why it ends the Parsha. It's like literally going up a mountain. It's literally the climax of the Avram and Yitzchak story. And it's Avram's relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Something changes here. It's not completely clear exactly what. There's like lots going on. And the hardest part of it is the theological strangeness of it, the uniqueness of God testing. Literally, it says that God tested Abraham. But generally, when we give a test, when we test somebody, it's because we don't know what they're going to do. When your teacher hands you a test, he wants to see if you know the knowledge because he doesn't know if you know the knowledge. So he wants to find that out. But there are other purposes for the test, but it's on its face very strange. And then at the end of the story, when Avram is about to shock the son, which, by the way, is also strange for God to command the person to do, to suppress their moral sense and to submit themselves to God, which seems to be at the very least the superficial way of reading the story, is the idea of suppressing one's will and desires towards God. That is a very strange thing for God to ask of a person. Maybe it's not so strange to, 4,000 years ago, but it's certainly strange to our ears. And Kierkegaard had to spend a lot of time, the philosopher had to spend a lot of time trying to figure out what that means and what that indicates about our fear and trembling in front of God and things like that. And is it the teleological suspension of the ethical? Right? That's the fancy way to put it. And the Rav talks about this a lot. But is that the accurate read? Is that actually what's going on? And then when God says at the end, now I know that you're a God-fearing man, what did God discover? And the Rishonim already deal with this.
Nothing, because God knows everything.
So that's the funny thing, is that now I know. How do you say now I know? So, for example, the Ramban says that there's a difference between knowing something theoretically and knowing something in actuality. Right? You can know theoretically that Avram will bring his son up, but there's a difference between that and Avram actually having done that and the knowledge of that actually having taken place, where he was willing and he was about to and perhaps even did, according to some opinions. What does Shaddam say? Okay, everybody has a different idea about what's going on in the story. Everyone wants to offer, and they have to solve a lot of these problems. What does it mean that God needs to test somebody? What does it mean that God found out something about Avram? What does it mean that he commanded Avram to do something that it seems to be very difficult morally, to sacrifice his son? I thought God doesn't require that of us. Or is that the lesson of the story? What would it mean for Avram to just jump ahead and do this? Why was he willing to? So let's see. There's a long comment from Shaddam. You can see that there's different strata here. There's the Ksav Yad, and then there's the Defus. Okay. Ba'alokim, Nisa et Avram. By the way, did you know that the Rashbam, just here in interpretations, the Rashbam understands this as a punishment of Avram. Why? Because Avram, in the past story with Avimelech, directly preceding this, Avram and Avimelech make a treaty to not attack each other. Okay? They make a treaty. It's Vayichritu Brit, Be'er Sheva, and they make a covenant. Mm-hmm. So the Rashbam said, what gave Avram the right to make peace treaties in Eretz Yisrael? It's not his land, it's God's land. So how could he do this? So therefore, he was punished by being forced to do something horrible, tragic, and put the fear in his heart that, like, everything is up to God, right? So that Rashbam says that explains the Vayi Acharar HaDvarim Ha'ela. It says it happened after these things, and it's not clear what after these things are. He says it happens in direct consequence of the sin that Avram did. Basically, the Rashbam says that he did something wrong, theologically wrong, by making a peace treaty, which is very fascinating, and therefore there's this punishment here. Okay, there's lots to say about peace treaties in Eretz Yisrael, right, based on this. I don't know if you can make any determinations of how that applies today, but it is an interesting source that people bring up about peace treaties and the right of the Jewish people to give away land for peace. Okay, anyway, here's what Shaddam says. Yodea HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God obviously knew. Chain Avram Nisug Achur Mishmor Mitzvotav. That Avram obviously was going to keep his mitzvot. L'chol Asher Yitzavahu. Anything that God commanded him, he would do. So why did God actually command him to do the Akedah if God knew that he was going to do it? And what does it mean to be a test? He wanted to give him the schar al hamasa hanorahahu, for the reward for such a great act. He ain schar ha'oved b'machshava b'lvat k'schar ha'oved b'pol, because there's a big difference between someone's reward for having thought a good deed versus having done a good deed. I really want to give money to the poor, but I never do it. Is that
really
worth that much? It's a nice thing. It means that I'm a good person, perhaps. Or in theory, a good person. And as we explained, that's the idea of the Ramban. Zot dat Ramban, the Rav Yosef Alva. And also Rav Yosef Alva, and Ikar and Maimer Dalet, Perek Gimel. V'chein Ikar. And he thinks that's probably what's actually going on. Not probably. He thinks that's what's actually going on. Dein Safek. Ki Milvan Eschar Safu. Besides for the fact that there's like a hidden reward. Hine Masa Atzmo Shibo Hira Atzmo Yare Elokim Be'emet. Not only that, there was a reward that you would get, you know, in Olam Haba, whatever that is. But there was also, it showed to others, everybody who could see this or heard about it, would see that Avram is a God-fearing man who's willing to do anything that God asks him. Lo chasach et bino et yichido mimenu. And he didn't hold back his son from God. That's an amazing display of God-fearing. Umotze adavar ki bano lo meit. And in the end, his son doesn't die, according to Shaddai, right? Kol ze garam la'avram simcha v'sason umatuk l'nefesh in aruchalav. Avram got a tremendous amount of satisfaction and happiness from the fact that he was able to display his yiras Hashem on the one hand, but also not have to kill his son in the process. That's what Shaddai says. Okay. Vidat Rambaman. That's Rambaman is who? Moses Mendelssohn. Moshe ben Moshe, I think.
No.
Moshe something. Fine. Anyway, Rambaman, he quotes Mendelssohn, who he's interested in. Mendelssohn was a Jewish philosopher, but much more secular than you would expect. Or I shouldn't put it that way. He was much more modern than you would call a Jewish philosopher at the time. And Rambaman, he quotes him often. Shaddai, I think, put his original commentary to the Torah called Mishtadel, which is a play on the word Shaddai. It means to strive, the one who strives. He put it as an appendix to a new publication of the Mendelssohn's Bior, which is a commentary of his own, to a German translation, I believe, to the Chumash. So meaning that Shaddai was attached to the idea of the philosophy or perhaps the personality of Mendelssohn. And there's lots to talk about Mendelssohn's role in Judaism, and not a lot of people know about what he stands for. And it's an interesting thing that he, you know, a lot of people know about Spinoza maybe because of the controversy surrounding Spinoza. And a lot of people know about, I don't know, other Jewish philosophers throughout the ages. But Mendelssohn seems to not have as much play in the Jewish community, in the Orthodox Jewish community. He was somebody who was like straddling kind of the modernity and orthodoxy in a time of transition. Okay. Anyway, he quotes Mendelssohn. He says, according to Mendelssohn, Ki hakavana b'nisayon l'chazek l'ameitz et leif ha'minusa b'mida min ha'midot. The idea is that when you test something, sometimes you're testing it to strengthen it. Perhaps you test a piece of leather by hitting it, but it hardens, right? And it gets harder and harder. So that's the idea that it's in order to encourage and to strengthen the heart of he who is tested. Until it's acquired in the heart. You cannot perfect your practical side with just thoughts, he says. Ki im ba'usif aleim hatmidat ha'pu'ulot ha'nishachot behem v'argel behem. There's a difference between doing like something once, and there's a difference between doing it 100 times. But if they say that for somebody to practice, if somebody practices something 1,000 times, they perfect it, something like that. So he says, to do something over and over again, oftentimes, it will make it part of your... A part of your, you know, by rote, not by rote, that's the wrong word. It will make it part of your personality, it's part of your character. You do it always, right? Yeah, it ceases to become something that you have to think about. And so he says, according to Mendelssohn, that's the reason why he was tested. It makes it hasmada, it makes it hergol, it makes him used to it. Until it makes him like, just this is his character trait. This is what he does. This is the person who he is. If you're a person who gives to charity every day, you become a more generous person. It embeds itself in your heart. You draw your, it draws you out towards that midah. That's his argument. So he wasn't tested to see. It wasn't to necessarily make from theoretical to actual. Necessarily, it was to keep on encouraging him to be a Yirat Hashem and to keep on submitting himself to God. I don't know where else we find this happening in Avram's life, where he's not constantly asked to do. So why would one action do that? But it's not so clear. He says, Ulefi da'ati, this is part of the Ktav Yad Yachaf. Ulefi da'ati, in my opinion, says Shadal, Hoilu bachar Hashem be'Avram, since God chose Abraham, Lemani ya avla am segula ma'amine yechud, Avram is supposed to be the forefather of a very special people. So God chose him for that purpose. Hoil v'shar amim ovdei elilim gam et b'neim et b'notem hayusorfim be'ish lelkeim lelam. Right? The problem is that the other nations that surround Avram, the top people are sacrificing their children, right? They're sacrificing them to the gods, right? And it's obviously God hates that. God does not like that people are sacrificing their children. It's an abomination, he says to God. And he obviously does not want the Jewish people to ever be drawn towards such terrible actions. Well, aval behefech, he wants the opposite. He doesn't want them to do anything even close to that kind of action. The problem is, okay, let's say you're Avraham. And God tells you, I don't want you to sacrifice your children to me. I want you to worship me with maybe animal sacrifices, but or with good deeds, being on the straight and narrow, make a covenant with me. Great, okay. The problem is you have all these nations surrounding you who say, look at it doesn't ask anything from them. It doesn't ask any sacrifices. We sacrifice our children. Abraham isn't even willing to do that. It looks bad for Avram at the start of this nationhood that's going to have a special status in God's eyes, it looks bad for him never to be forced to sacrifice his son. Right? What kind of submission does this guy have to his God? It's meaning Shadal says that God was worried, not worried is the wrong word, but God was concerned for or thinking about how this nation looks like. What's his PR level? It looks like it doesn't ask enough, right?
You want the good optics,
all right? It says nachshav lignut umum gadol l'torato machzikem ba. That it looks bad for God's Torah, and those who follow it to not be asked to do this kind of thing. Ki omru agoyim leYisrael. This is what the non-Jews will say to Israel. Aye avatchem lelokechem. Where's your love for your God or gods? That's what they would say, right? The Gam Yisrael atzmam, and also for the Jewish people themselves, ulai tiyeh datam nimivza beinam. Maybe in their own eyes, they were like, "What does God? Why is it that we don't have to express our love for God?" We have no way of truly showing how much we would give to God by being willing to give up maybe the biggest treasure we have in our lives, which is our children. Okay, so not only will it be a bad PR thing for the non-Jews to look at the Jews, but also the Jews themselves will wonder. Lefikach hikdim v'nisa et Avraham. That's why it introduces us with God tested Abraham. Asher kvar yadat levavav yadash yamod v'nisayon. Despite the fact that, of course, God knew what he would do in the nisayon, in this test. L'man yakir v'yedu gam Yisrael v'gam ha'umot ki avdei Hashem hanem anim lo. That by showing the Jewish people who are receiving the Torah and also the Avram's progeny that would happen after, that God can ask this from you, but he doesn't. He knows that you have love for him. He knows that Avram would have an extreme love for him and would be willing to do this if he asked. And how precious was this child that was given to them in their old age? That if God would ask him to actually do it, that he would actually do it. But God does not ask you to do that. Ella Shelohei Emet, but rather the God of truth, Lo Yachpots Bekarbonot Keilei. He doesn't desire these kind of sacrifices. V'ta'ev Yitavam, and he considers them abominations. V'nisayon Hazeh Asher Hu Kavod Ha'emunah V'tiferet Ha'maminim B'char Hashem La'azot Ba'avram Av Ha'maminim. Why did God choose Avram to do this instead of, I don't know, Yaakov, the father of all the tribes? Why didn't he ask, I don't know, Yiftach to do this in Shoftim? Actually, there are some parallels there. Why didn't he ask, I don't know, later thing? No, it's the first forefather to demonstrate the love that he actually has for God, to demonstrate that God doesn't actually require that of us, and it's a great PR move, okay? That's his argument. That not one generation went by that wouldn't have been willing to sacrifice their children to God, but of course would never have to, because God considers that immoral and disgusting. He goes on and actually has, if you see at the bottom, a Latin text where it describes about the Jewish people. All the way back, like, they have a story actually in Roman times about the Jewish people sacrificing one of their kids. Says this Roman author, who is it? Sanquinitone, I don't know who that is, who describes this action. I'm just reading in the what I can pick up from the Latin, right? Cronus, which was called by the Phoenicians Israel. What?
Why can't you read that?
Well, take a look. Most of these words, like, you can... Cronus ergo, you know what ergo means?
No.
What? Ergo? You use that in modern English language also. Yeah. Ergo means therefore, right?
Yeah. Ergo.
Right?
Like, you never done mock trial?
No. So I don't know what QM means, but Phoenic as Phoenicians. No. Israel and Vokent, you know, call them, like, vocabulary, Vokent, call them... the Phoenicians, whatever, it doesn't matter. And it says, I don't know, something to do with the nymph whose name is Enobret. I don't know, I guess that's Abraham, I'm not sure, or maybe Sarah, or something like that. And then, I don't really, it says that they had a son whose name was Ichud, which is interesting because it says, take your only son. So they remember it, right? So Shadal says there's tons of shibushim here, he says, but it says they took their only son, and I don't know exactly what's happening in the rest of it. I think that sacrifices him. I'm not sure.
But sacrifice?
Let's see. I could probably do Google Translate on Latin, but whatever. You can do it yourself if you're interested. And I don't know exactly the end of this, but anyway, it's quoted in Roman sources and Latin sources, which is interesting because they didn't know the Torah, all right?
But for the actually sacrifice.
And so he goes on and gives other possibilities of what was going on. Did God want him to sacrifice his son? Did Avram know he was going to sacrifice his son? Or did he know that he was never going to have to? There's other possibilities there. There's an opinion of Eichhorn. This is a guy in the 1700s that Shadal really doesn't like and fights against a lot, but he was a Bible commentary. And Eichhorn said that maybe this whole thing happened in a dream. And Shadal's like, maybe it happened in a dream, but a dream of Nebuah, maybe. So that's, first of all, it could be that actually fits with the Rambam. The Ramban thinks that the Rambam went too far. The Rambam says that anytime you see an angel in the Torah appearing in physical form or in some way interacting with humans, it happens in a dream. It's a prophecy. Angels cannot do that, right? So in the beginning of the Parsha, when the angels visit Avram, the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim explicitly says that happened in a dream. It did not happen in reality. What? But the Ramban says, how far are you going to take that? So, for example, the angels appear to Lot and blind the people of Sodom and help Lot escape. Did Lot never escape? Did the destruction of Sodom never happen? It all is all in a dream. And an interesting part of this, what? That'd be crazy. Wait, hold on a second.
When you say dream, it's not dream in the concept of he's asleep and they're coming to him while he's asleep.
Yeah.
You can more think of it as a hallucination.
I don't know. According to the Rambam, Avram is asleep. According to the Rambam, Avram is asleep. It happens in sleeping only.
So Lot has one of those.
Just he doesn't have a vision.
Lot has really low iron, so he just kind of passed out for a few minutes, had the dream, and then woke back up.
So what's weird also is that the angel is what comes out and tells Avram to stop and not kill his child. So the Ramban doesn't, I don't think, goes this far, but you can make the argument that according to the Rambam, also the entire story of the Akedah happened in a dream. I wouldn't go that far, I think. But it's a little weird because the angel comes out and says to Avram, don't sacrifice your son. Does that mean that Avram, when he lifted up the knife, then plopped on the ground and fell asleep, had a vision where the angel said, don't sacrifice your son, then woke up and went, whoa, you know, like,
maybe that would be as far as the killing.
What?
Maybe when he fell asleep, the axe just fell down.
Maybe, but like, you know, generally we're not talking about like God makes this person pass out or something like that. It's all really interesting, but okay, let's conclude with Chadal says that there's a PR move from God to make sure that the Jewish people and the nations know that the Jewish people could sacrifice their children. There's not a lack of sacrifice in the Jewish people. It is just that God doesn't want child sacrifice, and don't think less of the Jewish people because of that. It happens to be that Chadal is concerned about this in other places. He thinks that that is also the reason why Targum Onkelos exists. He says Onkelos was a ger, was a convert to Judaism, and he was also concerned about how the Torah sounds, not only to the non-Jews, so he changes a lot of the language in order to soften certain things when it comes to God, when it comes to the stories of the Avot, but he also changes certain things that maybe we would interpret in a negative way about ourselves. So he's trying to save the Torah from the criticisms of the non-Jews, and also strengthen our own belief and our own Judaism as well. That's the purpose of Targum Onkelos, according to Chadal. So it also fits. God would be concerned about this. Targum Onkelos is concerned about this. And we should be concerned about our Kiddush Hashem in the wider world as well. Shkoyach.